Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I am East Forest. Happy New Year. Happy 2022. That might be one of the first times that's rolled off my mouth. 2022. I got to get used to that. I hope you had a good one. I know this has been a weird one, but everything is weird. I mean, things are weird. They've been weird, but they're definitely weirder. And I can contend and feel in my bones and in my heart that things will continue to get even more weird. But weird's not always bad. I mean, on that note, I have a conversation with my dear friend, one of my best friends, Mr. Lewis Kofsky. And our relationship has been long and beautiful and weird only in the sense that, man, like the way he and I have interconnected in life is so cool and beautiful that it's also weird because you're just like, how do these things happen? That, you know, certain souls, you come together and you look back on certain decisions you've made for each other and how that aligned with your lives and changed your lives profoundly if you hadn't have made those decisions or even met. And as you'll hear in this podcast, Lewis is someone that I've known for a long time. And more than that, he's really the reason I do the whole East Forest thing. I mean, yes, it was naturally emerging, but he directed me in a certain way at a certain time that it made everything blossom. The very first ceremonies that were ever done were because of him, and albums, you know, as we move into the future, albums like Music for Mushrooms and many others, like most of what's on Music to Die To, Music to Be Born To, Crystal Starship, these are albums that were recorded with him in that ceremony space. And fast forwarding right up to today, Journey Space, this new offering we have, he's one of the co-founders along with my partner Radha, and Lewis is the CEO. He's basically running that ship. And so it was a long time coming that he and I could sit down and have a conversation, and I'm super grateful we could do that. But it's really amazing to connect those dots and to dive deeper into like where we're at with Journey Space and where we might want it to go. And it's actively growing and changing. But that was the intention, is that we'd start it and see where it wanted to go. That being said, on January 8th, in just a few days, if you're listening to this in a timely fashion, January 8th, 2022, we will have our second Journey Space real-time event. It's live in the sense that the whole point of it is that you come online in a group virtually, and there's real facilitators there supporting you through that journey. And the music that will be doing the bulk of the actual guidance of the journey itself is by myself. And they're going to be featuring in this journey a brand new recording that I've put together. Think of it as like a Music for Mushrooms follow-up. It's 4 hours and it's not available online. It's only going to be used for the inaugural use of it will be in this journey. And that's it for now. So if you want to check that out, if you want to experience that, you know, journey is whatever that means to you. That may be with substances that you work with in your legal fashion in your area. That may be through meditation or yoga or just relaxing. It's about intention. And when you bring that sort of intention into a shared group through shared witness, you're amplifying the work that you do. You're amplifying that intention, which is beautiful. So if you want to see if that's right for you, go to journeyspace.com and you can read more about it and sign up. And there's another one in February as well, and then more to announce after that. Before we get into this conversation, just a note to my friends in Portland. I'm really sorry that I couldn't make it out for my engagement that was supposed to be on January 1st, New Year's Day. I was practicing. I had been making arrangements for my friend Thatcher Schmid to play with me on stage. We were ready to go, but we've had a bit of a snowpocalypse here, and the highways were closed there for a hot minute. And then there's another one, like as I'm speaking, about to come. So then coming back would have been perhaps not possible, if not delayed, and certainly dangerous. So I was looking into last-minute flights, but as you guys know, this Omicron thing, like it's canceling all these flights, and flights were like, I mean, crazy expensive. There was no way it would be feasible with this particular event. So We went all around, tried to figure out what we could do, and it ended up having to be postponed. So stay tuned for when I'll be able to come back to Portland. And they did say, I think, that they're honoring the ticket holders for that new event, I believe. But more information soon. And thank you to everyone who was going to come. You know, it's my hometown, so I'm definitely looking forward to making that happen. And I apologize. You know, I was sad yesterday. That was on the day I was supposed to perform. I was like, man, I was supposed to be there. But right now, we will have some new dates announced, so stay on the newsletter at eastforest.org, or keep an eye out on socials if that's your thing. East Forest on Instagram and East Forest Music on everywhere else. We're having another one of our councils. So I have a council that's through Patreon, and that's a way to support this podcast and support the project. Go to patreon.com/eastforest and see if it's right for you. It's a wonderful way. Again, I don't try to do other like commercial ads on the podcast, just East Forest stuff, let you know what's going on, share my life. And otherwise, it's ad-free here, so this is sort of in the spirit of the gift, and I just leave it open for you if you'd like to hop on over there to do the East Forest Council on Patreon and support this podcast and all other things East Forest. So thank you for that, and thank you to everyone who is on the council so far. And I just want to give a special shout-out to those who joined our council on Patreon last month, including Paolo, Sarah, Stacy, Margaret, Jenny, ML, Lindsay, and Reed. So thank you so much for joining on with everyone else who is supporting in 2021. It's been a new experiment, and I ended the year by doing a live stream over there. That was like a 30, 40-minute meditation live stream that was super fun. So that, like, if you didn't see the actual live stream on Patreon, if you were to join, you could see it. It's just there's lots of content there, including demos and other things that you could see at any time, at your leisure, as they would say. That's that. Otherwise, you know, I'm here in the studio, lots of things going on. It was 0 degrees the other night. I guess that was New Year's Eve. That was pretty intense, but hey, taking lots of saunas and dreaming up what to do this year and working on lots of projects in the background that I look forward to telling you about soon. But for now, let's get into this conversation with my old friend, my dear friend, Mr. Louis Kofsky.
No doubt. Hey, Krishna, how are you?
Good. So I'll probably say a little background about our relationship in the intro to this podcast, but just in case I miss something, it goes way back. I mean, I've said this before in other forums, but it's worth repeating that we probably wouldn't be doing a podcast, or I don't even know how East Forest would or would have not manifested if it wasn't for the way our souls have made some sort of agreement to transform the planet.
Or at least transform ourselves.
And it all goes together. But the short of the long is, in 2008, we met at a ceremony and didn't know each other, and I was just starting my journey with this type of music and process and exploring all things mind-expanding, from the Evolver meetings to medicine work to meditation to music, of course. And I gave you my first album, which is The Education of the Individual Soul. So maybe it was 2009 because I had a CD that I gave you.
It was 2008.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, it was 2008.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 2008. And you walked in and ended up sitting right next to me.
Yeah, but I gave it to you, and I remember it took a while, like it often does in East Forest land. It was sort of like a seed that was planted, but I didn't hear from you for a while about this. And it was probably many months, but eventually you did come around to listening to it, and you got a bit obsessed with that record. I think you probably listened to it hundreds of times. And I was like, that's cool. But then you had the idea, which is definitely your idea, to take that music and transfer it into the live space, essentially with other people in the room, and guide them on deep journeys with this music. And that's what really started the whole thing. And you kept doing that, and you still do it. And that's actually how Journey Space started, which we'll get to, which is just yet again, like, well, now let's try this in the live, you know, virtual space. So thank you. And it's been, and you were the first manager for East Forest, because I forced you into that too. That was a reverse. I was like, okay, now I need your help. So it's been a long, beautiful journey, and you're an old, good friend. So thanks for that. And that's just sort of, so you've been weaving in the background of East Forest the whole time. And it's good to kind of give you a, we can kind of talk about some of the things we're working on now, but just sort of how this all happened.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it was, I remember thinking when I met you that you were a brave soul and that you were diving deep. And I remember you meditating a lot and really working on yourself. And you had a lot of ideas and a lot of big visions that it's amazing now, all these years later, to see how it's all manifested.
Yeah, you're someone, I was talking to Rada about this the other day when we were doing our Christmas Day journey work. And we're like, Lewis, man, he loves to host people. Like, yeah, you really do. I mean, you do. You love bringing people together. I would imagine that's something you're aware of.
Yeah, slightly.
Yeah, what is it you like? Like, what is it, the thing that fires you up about working with people in service like that, or bring people together?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you, and I think like many of us, we all feel that it's an extraordinary time right now, and that there's a lot of challenges. And honestly, you know, I studied design engineering in school, and I've tried a lot of different sort of roads to contribute. And at some point, I kind of just let go and gave in and realized that at the end of the day, the only thing that really was a sure thing, so to speak, was community. And this idea that compassionate community, people that are sort of looking out for each other, supporting each other, maybe just accepting each other, was going to be some form of solution, in that there'd be a bunch of people figuring different things out. And even if we didn't figure it out, we'd all be together and help each other out. And yeah. And that was, you know, I guess that, you know, on the more kind of high ideal level was sort of what drove me or inspired me to do a lot of the community things that I've done. And I think in general, I do like people. And I think it's great to curate, you know, intentional gatherings of folks and get folks together and enjoy life. I mean, I think that we're social creatures, and as much as I may like to go at it alone and go do my things, it's just more fun, more enjoyable, more meaningful when we reflect this experience amongst ourselves.
Yeah, you got a really good community we had going at Growing Heart Farm. I mean, it's still going on. So you bought this farm. You used to live in New York City,
yeah,
and you were in the Lower East Side. And I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might have been the very first ceremony that you organized, which was at another like upstate property somewhere, some friend's place. And you had like a vision or something about, I should have a farm, I should sell my place. And a lot of people have visions and ideas in deep work, but you actually, like, I remember, like, within months you're like, I sold my place, I found this farm. I'm like, holy shit, you did it. And you've been there probably like 10 years now or something, right?
Yeah, we're finishing our 12th year.
Wow.
At Growing Heart Farm.
Organic farm / community center. You know, many events have gone on there. It's about 70 miles north of the city on a train line. So you can theoretically walk from the train to your spot.
Not even theoretically. That was the whole deal. Like, can we find a place that's within walking distance of a train line? We were growing food on our roof on the Lower East Side, like on an old tenement building.
Right. Yeah.
And we set out, I had been producing a film about between Timothy Leary and where we are now in the psychedelic renaissance. There was this guy, Daniel Pinchbeck, who had written a few books, and I was producing a film about him. And as part of that, we were sort of assessing the entire landscape of design science and permaculture and regenerative agriculture and all these things. You know, we started a group called Thrive, and we tried to start our own complementary currency and time bank in downtown New York. And
pre 2012, we have to prepare for the ascension.
Yeah. I don't know if we thought it was an ascension, but
I'm just joking. Whatever. I was helpful. You know, I was in all the way. The aliens, the ascension.
Yeah, I mean, the aliens. I had years ago had, you know, quote, you know, experiences that were not able to be explained. They didn't involve any psychedelics, which was even more profound.
Oh, we'll have to get to that.
Sleeping on the temples in Guatemala and Tikal. And so anyway, we had interviewed all sorts of folks for this movie, and we were deep in it, you know, trying to figure out what to do. And so I set out to grow my food on my roof. And after like a couple of years of doing that and only really succeeding in growing like 10% of my food on the roof of our building, it was clear that I was going to trade this apartment. So I traded a 500 square foot apartment for a 40 acre farm and established a CSA, our very first season, got a bunch of friends together and started hosting people. And the vision was reskilling, relearning, living sustainably. We implemented all kinds of things you read about, food forests, and we had solar energy and all kinds of compost and no-till agriculture and so on and so forth. Yeah. And thus began the project of Growing Heart Farm, and it continues today. And we're super close to the city, and so we feed people from the city. And you know, what became really apparent was just reconnecting people to natural processes and themselves, you know, giving them a space to come and be humans. You know, New York City has changed a lot, certainly, in the last 25 years or so. You know, 9/11 certainly did a lot to change the idea that things may not need to happen in a New York minute. You know, that was the first time the city really paused. And then I think it's continued to change. And I think COVID has changed it a lot as well. But it's been a place that's really shown the power of community and also you know, it's built on the next door to an abandoned mental institution.
Yeah, that place is a trip.
It's 950 acres.
Yeah, a huge complex of buildings across the street from the train station. One of these sort of upstate relics but isn't it now, didn't you say it was bought by some new group or something, a religious group or?
Yeah, I mean, it's had a number of different lives, and now there is a group that does seem to be rehabilitating it. And I think it's great that there is some degree of spiritual practice going on there. They've got the church open again. There's a lot of, there's an unmarked graveyard that borders my property. And there's a lot of work we've done through the years to sort of, you know, not just run off into the woods, not move to Hawaii, you know, take this land where we, you know, hauled away containers full of trash from the land and really built a thriving and regenerative place, both physically and in many ways spiritually. You know, especially during COVID, it really became apparent as people were coming up and escaping their little boxes and just coming out and unpacking and reconnecting. It's been a lesson to show that it doesn't matter how messed up land can get, you can bring it back.
So in COVID, was that when you also founded the church aspect, which was another sort of trailblazing avenue for it?
You know, we had been, I had started marrying people, performing ceremonies, you know, years ago, and had sort of found myself walking this other dimension of my life. And as part of that, we started hosting groups, you know, we started bringing together intentional prayer circles and doing different types of work on the farm. And we realized that while we could become a non-for-profit educational center, that actually more accurately, we really were a religious congregation and founded around the idea that every individual has their own unique belief system and their own unique path, and that there's really no one right way, no leader, no guru, but that it does not mean that people know their right way. And so that there's a huge opportunity to people to come experiment and try different modalities and different ways of praying, reconnecting, whether it's a, you know, wilding permaculture men's weekend, you know, complete with tug of war ropes and all of that, or a silent retreat, whatever it may look like. And so we did, we founded a church, and we kept it quiet for many years. And then we formally registered with the IRS in the state of New York, right before COVID. And yeah, that was when we were going to go out with some different plans. It was a, kind of a different world. And, you know, I guess Spirit had different plans for us in terms of where that was going to go.
Yeah. Well, I never thought I'd be the president of a church, but sometimes you need to step into what comes forth. Yeah. So, and just to bring us up to speed, and then also in that time period in COVID, we started doing those virtual ceremonies, which was right away, like within 2 weeks or something of the lockdown. Yeah. We did the first, and I did five, and then we just did another one officially for Journey Space. And Journey Space, this platform, journeyspace.com, we co-founded with Radha, and we're offering, we kind of said like, hey, look, we're doing these virtual ceremonies for our community, and it's valuable, but it also has sort of these unexpected advantages, you know, like being in your home. It's cheaper, you know, for any sort of support and donations, all sorts of things. And so we thought, I've always been looking over the years, all these years, like, how is there a way to meaningfully take an experience that might hit a small group of people at a particular physical space that is an incredible amount of energy on my part that I feel good about, but it's like, it's only hitting these people. Yes, I can make audio recordings. And that was the first attempt at, now this could reach others, which it did. But then it's like, well, what if there's another layer of guidance there and shared community and opening that up essentially to the world? And that's what Journey Space is an experiment to see what's the best way to do that. So we've done one sort of official launch on December 4th, 2021. That was our like beta launch where I played live. And moving forward, we're definitely, I'm sure we'll always have some form of, like, we're having ceremonies on the 8th and February. Is it?
January 8th and February 12th.
Yeah, 2022.
Yep.
And then there'll be other things. And I'm sure we know it will grow into other offerings. In different ways, and we're still developing the best way, but we're starting with these sort of just, you know, it's like a movie ticket. Come to the ceremony, we'll be there in real time, we're there together, we do these integration circles, and you enter into the journey how it feels right to you. Whatever, you know, and that's self-defined at this point. So, that's what's going on. Is there anything you'd like to say about Journey Space in general, or like how you're feeling about it, or the promise of it, or what you're excited about with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this really interesting time we're in, where it's something like 25% of the population is spiritual but not religious, in the U.S. at least, and that we're really looking for new ways to connect and share. And I think what we saw, I think it was March 21st, 2020. Was the first virtual ceremony.
Equinox, sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was dedicated to the medical professionals, and we had a number of nurses and doctors join us. And it was a powerful time. We didn't know what was going to happen. We thought it was just going to be this thing we'd try, this temporary thing. And people were rating it as top three experiences in their life. And they were feeling connected to people through a Zoom call. You know, we had video off, but we were all there. And, you know, sometimes people would give us a text and we'd call them up and check in with them. And it just really worked. And for us, it was a real eye opener, I think, in that, wow, it doesn't have to be so hard. It's so much work to get people together and host them, and it's expensive and people have to travel, and then it's COVID and we can't travel and we can't get together and all of that. Yeah. And it really just showed us that, wow, I mean, really the fundamentals here is the intentionality and the community piece. And then of course the music, right? Which, you know, we were sort of pioneering like OBS and how to get the live stream going and all of that. You're like, I don't know how to do this. And I did not. I was like, we're figuring out, because we have to shoot Sesame Street. At the time I was working at Sesame Street, and we've got to flatten the curve. So we got to shoot, you know, these PSAs and get messages out there. So we just kind of figured it out, didn't we? And it worked.
Yeah, I think I did. There were a few email chains with Sesame Street, like engineers or something, like about, hey, how do I get my my crazy music out there through OBS? There's nothing I like less than like figuring out technical things like streaming and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I'm able to figure it out usually, but it's really stressful, you know, especially doing that. You know, I'm over here playing and on the screen is like, you know, monitor levels and stream health and kilobit rates for the video. And I'm just like, I hope this is working, you know, but weirdly, like when we did the stream on December 4th, which was beautiful. I was like, this is weird to me that I'm a little more used to now, like talking to a camera and no one's here. You know what I mean? Like before that was very strange, because there's something very important about the witness in the room. And all of those ceremonies, Radha was here. And that was important because all the ceremonies we've done, like recordings I've made in that space, like Music for Mushrooms, but even albums like Crystal Starship, Portlanders, Music to Die To, Music to Be Born To, they all had this magic element of something being created while it's being essentially witnessed with an open heart too. And that's way different than if I was just alone in a room doing the same process, I think. And that's one of the things about Journey Space that I think it's difficult to communicate that. And maybe we don't fully give credence to that, but this idea that we're there witnessing one another and how that also sort of the golden rule, like how that feeds ourselves. It's not just how that makes it valuable for the other person. It's a positive feedback loop. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there are a couple pieces of that. I think, you know, one is the basic connection piece, right? People are just so disconnected, whether from themselves or from whether other folks. And just the idea that there's other people there taking the same time, doing the same thing, and knowing that you're walking a path with someone else, I think is a really big piece of it. You know, I think that in and of itself, and then the intentionality of it, right? I think it gives another level of meaning to it, knowing that the other folks are there. So I think it's really important. And what was surprising to us, you know, we did surveys for each one. You know, we sort of were like, well, if we're going to do this, let's figure out how to do this right.
Right.
And people energetically felt it, even though we weren't touching anyone. We kind of did these things where we would hold hands through the Zoom screen. And people like went out of their way to make comments about it and say, wow, I really felt it. And energetically we were all there. And I think we forget that piece, you know, and how accessible it is to us. It's not some big, you know, go to this special retreat or go to this big gathering of like-minded people. I mean, sometimes it can just be, you know, let's get together and share this thing. And now that we're coming out the back end a little bit of hopefully of what's
whatever
going on
this
in
is. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you hear more and more of these stories about these virtual communities that people started and folks coming together and witnessing each other and sharing together. And I think there's a lot to it. And one of the things that gets me really excited about it is that I'm someone who thinks a lot about their carbon footprint and about I've flown probably more than a lot of people will fly in a lifetime. And that, you know, every time I do it, I have this kind of angst and pain. And this idea now, like I just had virtual Christmas with my mom and it was great. In some ways better. Sorry, Mom.
I don't think she's listening.
But yeah, to know that that's available to us. And I did find that during COVID, there were many relationships which I was able to deepen. And just by having that consistency of connection and time to drop in with them. Oftentimes folks that may have been in a very different place that I would not normally have seen that often.
Well, there's something that goes hand in hand with like pressures and how that creates change and growth. Just like human nature. And so in a lot of ways, the collapse and the pressures we're experiencing, and COVID certainly was a big one, is pushing us into modalities of growth and experimentation like you're talking about. And that really is what Journey Space came out of, was this idea of just like, would this help? And if so, how can we do it in the smartest way? And that's it's a growth thing. It'll continue to figure itself out. We need lots of modalities, and we need especially ones that are more and more accessible and more digitable, I guess, like ways so they're not just in real life is awesome. But it's sort of an all hands on deck mentality right now where like if it works, you might as well try. And if it doesn't, then pivot to something else. But that's the only way to find out.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I'm excited to see where we can go with that. But, you know, also sort of when coinciding with this psychedelic revolution of psychedelic therapy and interest, I think we thought, too, there was a bit of a missing piece with the ceremony itself or the role of ceremony, particularly music, to guide the journey as a central tool. It's just something like I talked about a lot with John Hopkins, whereas it's not offered much or discussed much out there. And why do you think that is? Because to me, it's sort of like, well, the whole enchilada is the experience. And then how you support it before and after is, of course, important. But without the experience itself being positive and deep, what's to integrate? You know, it's amazing to me that music is this weird blind spot. And maybe it's because a lot of people don't understand, like, how music is made or like what it is. They're just kind of like, well, music is music, I guess. And so it's hard to explain to people or connect with them how that could be different and why it's important. And what have you found like over the years, how music and the role of like ceremony and ritual itself to build the experience?
Yeah. I mean, in a way it's like the music is the medicine, right? And that is really what has the power. If you look across modalities, if you look across contexts, music keeps popping its head in there, right? I was listening to something this morning about hospice, and they were talking about, you know, that was one thing that could easily be offered, right? And it's accessible to everyone. You don't necessarily need to understand it. You don't need to necessarily speak a language. There's no doing music right, right? Listening to music is listening to music. And if it makes you dance, if it makes you cry, if it makes you laugh, that's great. It's all there for that. And I think you touched on something important in that there's startups that are looking at music for sure. And music's always been a huge industry. But specifically this idea of music as a healing modality, it's hard to quantify, right? It's not necessarily that measurable. And the other thing about music is like, we oftentimes know when we don't like it, but it's hard to kind of put the magic for, I mean, you must know this as a creator, it's hard to put the magic formula of what makes music great, right? Or what is going to allow something to become a mega global hit.
That's kind of, maybe that's actually why it's music so great, is because you can't just grab it and own it and say X is X, Y is Y. And that's why there's an ineffableness to it. It's some sort of translation of the ineffable. And that's, I think, why we inherently love it, because of its potentiality to speak a language that's beyond the 3D. And it reminds us of like everything we really are, our fullness of our soul beings. And I that's kind of a lofty way of looking at it, but it's really true. And yeah. I think you naturally intuited this back in 2008. And you were essentially saying, let's take this music, we need to use it just as the music to have people go deeper. And something in you, you're not a musician in that traditional way, but something in you knew that.
Yeah. You know,
it was about the music.
Well, I felt it, maybe. Maybe it was me just expressing my truth, right? And understanding that this, and there's something about your music, you know, having shared your music, organized so many group listenings and ceremonies for your music, you know, in New York, internationally, and so on, and seeing such a broad audience, right? Yeah. We've got the crew coming in from Brooklyn and the Bronx and Rockland and all over the tri-state area, which is a relatively diverse community, you know, many different cultures and backgrounds and folks flying in as well, right? For, you know, oftentimes what we hear people say is, wow, the music. And I think, you brought up this whole sort of psychedelic renaissance that's happening right now. And there's firsthand accounts of folks that are describing the music and synesthesia and becoming one with the music. But I think, you know, to answer your question, I just don't know that it's sort of become more than it is, because there's a huge barrier to entry there, you know, and what it takes to create music that will really guide people and really help people connect. And if you look at it, more of the shamanic traditions, there's songs that have been handed down for millennia, right? The you know, in the, for example, in the ayahuasca tradition, you have these ícaros, which are healing songs, and the, you know, I just need to listen to those songs without being in Peru or somewhere where you'd be drinking medicine, and I feel changed, right? I feel the power of it. And so I often wonder if we may, in the same way that we're seeing such an expansion in meditation with the work that apps like Headspace and Calm are doing, that we may be, you know, seeing something with the intentional use of music that may follow that. Because I think there's a real power there. And I think that there's also a way to, you know, maybe not make the best selections with music as well.
You know? And that's the part that's, I think, really challenging to communicate and understand, because you can't just say it's like a soup recipe, like, well, just don't put in cardamom or something. It's like, well, sometimes, yeah, you know, and everyone has a different flavor, but there does seem to be some kind of connective tissue about what works. And even I don't understand that fully. Like when I get to listen to I was just testing out the music for the January 8th Journey Space Journey. So I'm creating a recording that's unreleased music of mine from other ceremony recordings so that we can use that. And that would be, for now, at least exclusive to Journey Space. And when I get to take medicine, and it flips something around in me where now I'm totally the experiencer and not the creator. I don't even know how, really. It's a beautiful gift that I can, that you're able to do that through these teachers. And it's confounding to me, because I hear something coming through that's not just me, like my identification in my head as an individual person. I hear like, what is all of us? I hear like a greater intelligence that is you, that is everyone who's listening. And that's, I get almost bowled over by the beauty of that, but I can't tell you like how, like, oh, you play piano and then you do this, you know, like, I don't know. It's what's amazing is that it's so fluid. And so you have to kind of trust that if people put the intentionality as an artist or musician to say, I want to create music for this space, I think it will happen naturally. It's sort of a prayer or a calling you put out into the world, and then it will come through you if you just put in the will to essentially repeat that process or practice that process. Just keep doing it. It will evolve. It will come through your voice because you are a fingertip of the tree of the universe. It will be through your interests musically. But if you have the right intention, it can happen. And that's not something you can just go to a business or a scientific experiment and say, okay, so we're just going to do these things. And sometimes it's not the best match because people are trying to find their voice with it, which I agree is challenging, but it's been happening, as you said, for millennia. So it will continue to happen. We will create new songs. It just has to be coming from the right place, from the heart.
I think there's something about that. I was hanging out with someone that's traveled with the Dalai Lama for most of his career and done a lot of work documenting holy places. And we were talking about what makes a holy place. And it's really the repeated ritual. It's really the intentional prayers that happen in that place. Mm. And I see it happening on our farm, where people have come for the last 12 years and they've come together and they've prayed together and they've intentionally, you know, hoped for something more or asked or worked towards healing. And you hear people, and this is just a farm that was on a formerly abused piece of land with, you know, a white guy from Boston and who stewards it and other folks. So it's no magic, right? There's no, you know, external, you know, light that shines down and says, this is a holy place. It's just this idea that people begin to come together and practice in this way. And I think that the same holds true for music and the way that you approach your music and what you bring to it, I think comes through on the other end, and people feel that, whereas music that may not have come from that place gets repurposed. I think there's sort of a lack of authenticity or a lack of intentionality that our souls are able to tap into. And I can think of examples of music that really is amazing and doesn't necessarily work in a ceremonial context. And then I was just speaking with someone else who said that, you know, his sacred place is going to a Flaming Lips concert live, right? You know, and I could see that, right? I understand that, for, you know, having worked with enough live, you know, especially A-list, you know, through the times musicians, you really see that connection to source and that ability to allow something to come through, even if it's like something you wouldn't necessarily associate with ceremonial music. And so I think there's many forms of it. And it's very encouraging to me. I mean, one of the things that I very much look forward to with Journey Space is, okay, we've got East Forest as sort of a benchmark, and understanding, well, what else works, right? What are the other voices? You know, through the pandemic, we did work with a lot of other voices. And, you know, part of my role in hosting a retreat center is bringing in other musicians and other types of healers and other types of modalities, and understanding what people resonate with. And there is a range. There's no perfect formula. Like, I think there's a genre of where East Forest sits, and I think you could probably break that down into a number of core elements. That doesn't mean you'd be able to reproduce it. And I've listened to people that have tried to knock off East Forest. You know, someone just sent me a recording of this guy, and it only took me like a minute or two to realize, like, oh yeah, this is not going to work. You know, something and I think it has to do with that intentionality and that understanding and that letting go, and something that where it stops being a performance. And yes, it starts becoming an expression of some deeper truth.
Yeah, that's a key point. And I always would say that when we were doing ceremony type events. I don't call it. To me, like in terms, like it is not a performance because that implies some kind of like entertainment or this role thing play. Mm-hmm. And it was more like A, I'm improvising. So B, I don't feel in control of that. I don't know what wants to come through. I don't. And it's going to be a creation, an experience. And I've actually been leaning into that. I had this big revelation that something is more a confirmation of something I've been feeling for a couple years, is that my live space, quote unquote, public performances where people pay a ticket and come, I feel like want to move in that direction where one day they will be just like the ceremony space, improvised, completely free, completely vulnerable, but the same. And there's not, whereas I normally feel this expectation of, hey, I got to entertain you on a certain level, you know, there's an expectation socially and culturally of like the arc of this performance, and I need to maintain your attention. So something, you know, maybe it's a little bit of beats, there's a little bit of Ram Dass, and I walk around the room, and that's just the theatricality of it, which is honorable and beautiful. But I'm saying, like, how vulnerable could I get to really fully let in the magic of the numinous and the unknown by not having a plan? And that's terrifying to me.
That is.
And I do it. Like, right now it's like 50-50, but I'm like, what if it went all the way? And I've done it a little bit in the last year, a couple events that we defined as like, this is not going to be a ceremony concert, and that's what it's going to be. And I think the expectations are such that they're like, okay, yeah, it's going to be really deep and extended. And then I felt the freedom to go there. But I think you're right. There's sort of a shift in the performer's head about not being a performer and more of a, I hate to use the word channel, but like, I don't know. You're just open. I think improvisation, there's something there versus like just performing songs. Because when you rehearse, you're saying, I want it to be a certain way. But what if that's not what's wanted in the moment? And that's kind of the key. It's saying like, whatever's emerging is what's emerging. And it's going to have like ebbs and flows. And that's like life. That's okay. It will build and find its place. And then it will decay. And maybe there's some time where it's, you're building into something else. And that it kind of is part of the magic of the journey music.
Yes. And I think listeners are growing up to this idea that they can let go of some of the expectations. And I think that's a little bit what happened during this time when we all went virtual and we all began to accept new standards of what things may be. And also realize that life isn't one big perfectly produced thing, which is all going to work out. Like we were in a free fall there together. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I can remember when the early days of East Forest Ceremony included some pre-recording, right?
The album, right? Education Individual Soul was sort of like, let's listen to this album. And then I needed to fill out more hours around it, essentially. It was just like a little intro and outro to the album.
And that was a courageous step. And I remember the night when you said, we're not going to use the album.
You said it. You were like, I think we shouldn't use the... No, I remember. You said, I think we should drop the album. And I was like, are you sure? Like, are you sure it will still be as good? You know, because I was like, I thought the whole thing was about that album. And if we drop the album, are people going to... Like, I would play, and then there'd be a moment where everyone would put on headphones on like a splitter or something. Yep. And we'd all hit... And we'd listen to the 45-minute album, and then I would like keep playing.
We told everyone,
which,
bring an
it
iPod.
It seems crazy now. Yeah, to me, I'm like, what a weird way to do it. But back then, that was like, no, that's the way.
Bring a digital media player. And I remember people being like, I'm never going to do that. And people that are now huge fans of yours were like, the idea that we're going to sit inside and listen to music and use technology. I mean, that's the other crazy thing. You know, if you sat in ceremony, I think you give this example where the leader of the group or the shaman or whomever he calls himself shows up with a rattle. Yeah. He drops in with a backpack and a rattle. And it's like, here we go. I'm going to hold this room for the night with a rattle. And then East Forest shows up with, you know, live looping and sound banks and the whole deal. But there's something about that. We've evolved with technology and it's everywhere. And it's not good or bad. It's all about its use. And so I think there's something really magical that happens when you have the courage to let your ego get out of the way and to explore in that vulnerable space. And that's really hard because sometimes it doesn't work out. But I think in that ceremonial context, and I think also in that group context, is like not working out may just be fine. You know, there's something about the imperfections. I mean, another great example are like Grateful Dead bootlegs, right? In terms of like all the people that went to those shows. And I'll be frank, you know, sometimes listening to those long riffs, you're kind of like, huh? But you can see how it all works. And then even the recordings of them, right? There's something about that intentional construction of something that hasn't been heard, something that's unfolding, that's not heavily reproduced or premeditated, that and what emerges in those spaces, that whether you're hearing it live the first time or whether you're hearing, in the case of the Grateful Dead, a bootleg 25 years later, there's still something there that touches people and that continues to attract people.
Yeah. Let's pivot a bit with a question. As I think when we started Journey Space, it gave you the opportunity to do a really deep dive on the landscape of what is emerging and all the different offerings and companies and people and all of it. So you kind of have a unique vantage point. What are you concerned about as sort of like the blind spots in this renaissance and this wave that's happening or not happening? Like, what are the things that you think you're a little worried about or you think that we need to put special attention to?
Yeah, I mean, I think as they say in the psychedelic space, and and I refer to that as this industry that's building up around it. And I think the industry sort of has three parts. There's a big kind of pharmaceutical angle to it. And then there's a big kind of technology angle to it. And then technology/product. And then I think there's sort of like this retreat center kind of clinic angle to it.
Like, and medical in a sense, or?
Well, right now the money is largely following the medicalization route, as it's referred to, because, you know, pharmaceuticals are patentable. You know, IP is intellectual property is intellectual property. So if people are going to put money in, that's one way of guaranteeing a return. And so I'm both encouraged and discouraged, right? I just was at the Horizons Psychedelics Conference in New York City, and that was very encouraging, right? I think there's a lot of great things happening, like the North Star Pledge and the work that Vine Ventures just did to ensure that MAPS is going to be able to bring MDMA to market in a good way, right? And not have to make some kind of shady deal with pharma that may compromise the standards of care or the quality of treatment. But my concern is that I think because of the way our culture views wellness, there's this idea that you take a pill and that fixes you. And I think fundamentally, you know, psychedelic assisted therapy is only as good as the kind of therapy. And I use therapy broadly, the modality that you're using. Like if you were just to sort of take ketamine and just sit down, I don't think you'd have nearly as positive effect as you would as if you were to have a few therapy sessions and then go to a ketamine assisted therapy and then have some talk therapy after. Or, and I'll equally say, or is if you were with some of your best friends and went out to this amazing DJ and had this super heart opening, you know, transformative experience that you're all able to share together and then process, you know, later that evening.
Well,
or the
journey
next
being journey space is like the idea of doing it on your own, alone or whatever, versus being in a group or having some guidance, some support is what you're speaking to too.
Yeah, I think that the music, the intentionality, the preparation, and the integration, there's a lot of lip service paid to that, but I think fundamentally my concern to answer your question is that we kind of lose that. And it becomes a lot more about like, okay, you're going to do a psychedelic. And it's like the psychedelics are almost separate. It's secondary in a way, right? The more important thing is to show up for a ceremony, whether or not you're taking psychedelics. And get, and one of the things you always say is like, thank you for giving yourself this time to unplug and go in and reflect. And I think that's the part that I get a bit concerned about, and that, you know, we may lose that. And I think that's part of the magic that's happening in this space. And I think the other thing that, yeah, I just read this other article where they, the writer mentioned like, wow, there's a sort of evangelical zeal in this whole world. Right. You know, there's a super hyped up, you have all these people that have, you know, gone to Peru and had an ayahuasca retreat and are coming back, and they're sort of carrying a lot of their old ways with them in this cracked open new way. And we've seen it, right? We've seen it through the years. We've watched this happen. And, you know, if we go back, you know, even to some degree, R. Gordon Wasson, a little bit of what he did. I mean, he did some many great things, but he also never got consent to, you know, kind of destroy these people's way of life, the Mazatecs.
I don't think consent was a thing in the 1950s.
Yeah, and the poor, I mean, what that did to that community, you know, the fallout. For the way that was done. So I hope that we're able to do this in a more thoughtful way that really considers, you know, that where we are now, all of the folks that are involved. I mean, there's lip service being paid to reciprocity, you know, reverence is another key piece. You know, I think that's easy to lose. Like you have, you know, there's a thin line between the transformative power of psychedelics and then the ego inflation that can go along.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we've seen that as sort of the people who keep picking up the phone. I mean, over and over and over and over again. And there's a part of someone who sees that is like, well, is that good? Like, because I think the proof always comes like, how are you living your life?
Yeah.
Like,
what are you doing?
That's kind of it. It's like, how's your life going? How are you feeling? How are you in your community? Cause whatever you do, psychedelics or not, and that's really the campus of our life. Is our life. Right. And we're meant to be here. We're not meant to always be away, always getting high. I think Ram Dass would say that. Like, he's like, I was always getting high. I was always leaving. I always had to come down. He's like, what am I running from? Do I always want to run, you know, or do I want to take the curriculum? And there's something there about the way people can feel self-important. Like you said, it's a tool. And I think you can use it in ways that can inflate the ego or make you, you know, people who become basically these cult leaders who think like they're now Jesus.
Delusional. Jesus.
Yeah. Wait, so it has that potentiality.
You know? Yeah. Unpack that picking up the phone. Can you explain that? That's a deeper reference there that I think.
Well, gosh, was it
unpacking.
Alan Watts? I wish I could remember.
It was Kent McKenna, wasn't it?
I don't think it was McKenna, but homage to all the great thinkers of psychedelic past. But the idea that like, you pick up the phone because it rings and that's you getting the messages and like all the information, the journey, and then you hang it up. And it's the idea that you hang up the phone and then as opposed to you're consistently picking up the phone.
Right. Get the message and act.
Get the message and then go use the message for a while before you get another phone call. But we know a lot of people who would just keep going back and back and back. And I didn't want to judge, like, I don't know their internal process. But like I said, I would sort of just say, like, how's the life going? You know, are you transforming or is it just crumbling consistently? You know, or are you an asshole? You know what I mean? It's like, we know people like that too. It's like, they have great ideas, but it's like, you got a lot of, it's, I always admired people who had beautiful ideas in their writing or their words. And then I'd meet them and they really seemed like they're trying to put them into practice. It was really an earnestness of like, I'm trying to live what I think and espouse. So, but yes, there is a lot going on in the space. And I don't think you probably ever thought back in 2008, it would be like it is now. I mean, I certainly didn't. In 2008, it was weird, man. My friends thought I was weird. They're like, what are you doing? You're going upstate? And like, that's okay, whatever. And now it's as it is now. You can invest in companies. And it's sort of like, it's crazy. Did you expect anything like this? Is there part of you that thought it might happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm professionally working in transformational medicine, some of that psychedelic, some of it's a whole sort of wing of modalities, which are, you know, sort of keying off this idea that the medicine is the integration, right? And that, you know, fortunately, in my case, I was lucky to recognize early on, like seeing what we would call retreat junkies, you know, people that are just showing up and chasing an experience. Versus, I was also fortunate early on in my career to see people who would show up to a transformational journey once and then go and like start a company or
buy a farm
or, you know, make big changes, right? Yeah, go out and change their career from, you know, doing coal-fired energy to, you know, renewables or, you know, those types of things. So I think, you know, having watched what they call the underground scene for so many years, you know, I've been fortunate. I spend a lot of time in Latin America. I've worked a lot in Latin America, and seeing all these different communities and different churches and sort of groups that are doing this transformational work, and then seeing a steady stream of amazingness coming out of that. Right. I mean, I think if you go all the way back, like Star Wars, like Yoda is a Shipibo name. Like this is amongst us, right? This work has been happening for a long time, right? Or Avatar is another great example of Cameron clearly picked up some of those ideas in the jungle and some of the work that he was doing there. And so, you know, did we think we'd be in this place? You know, I'm someone that, you know, early on sort of chose this sort of less traveled path. And it's having this moment in the spotlight right now that we never would have thought. And I think in some ways it's like a lesson of trusting ourselves. And I think that's why I have hope for this moment. Like I'm not a doomsayer. I'm not a hater on big pharma coming in or any of that, because I think we don't know how it's going to play out. We don't know if there's a right way or a wrong way, but we do know that, for example, a roadman, you know, like a peyote roadman or a shaman that travels in the United States for, you know, 3 months out of the year, that's not really a scalable system that's going to radically alter the world, right? It's going to do its part and it's going to turn on a lot of different people. And I think it's safe to say that, you know, I don't know when this will air, but it's a few days after Christmas, and where I am, it's in the 60s. And it's not supposed to be in the 60s where I am. And so I think there's a lot of evidence that things are out of balance and that we need to, at a pretty broad scale, make some changes, each of us individually, to really move forward some fundamental systemic change in many of our larger systems. And I think that is what's encouraging right now. And while, yes, we're hot on the trail of medicalization, there's also a lot of things happening like Measure 109 in Oregon, which I think is super exciting. It's also terrifying, right? It could really go wrong. But I'm not as concerned about it really going wrong, because it's in that case, they're talking about psilocybin and they're not making up some new chemicals that, you know, that may have unintended consequences. And I think there's enough that we can learn from historically that I think that there's some real potential. Now, am I concerned about pharmaceutical companies that are making like a fast-acting ayahuasca that doesn't make you purge? I don't know what's going on there. You know, that's a little weird, right? Am I worried about the proliferation of ketamine clinics, sort of infusing people with ketamine and keeping them on IV, ready to give them a sedative if they have too intense an experience, and then sending them out into the world without any real tools to understand what they just experienced? Yeah, that's challenging. But I think there's a lot of really great people. And I think, you know, this is something that Rick Doblin has said, I believe, the founder of MAPS, that, you know, the 60s and the 70s happened, and as a society, we developed a lot of tools, right? When the first psychedelic renaissance started, and then it kind of cracked up in the late 60s, you know, Timothy Leary was saying some pretty out there stuff, you know, like everyone take LSD and break the world, you know,
destroy it.
Yeah. That's a very privileged point of view, right? If you've got food and you've got a Harvard education in his case, and, or at least a professorship and all of that, like you can afford to like blow it all up. But there's a lot of people with like poorly formed egos and, you know, basic deficiencies and having enough of what they need, that may not be the best strategy, but those types of people that may have spent a few years with a meditation practice and then they go in to sort of unblock some of their challenges, that's a different story. And so I think that is in many ways where we are right now. You know, I'm very encouraged about the work that's happening with the veterans and the idea that they're sort of creating these cohorts of guys that are supporting each other. And then they go down to Peru and have a couple weeks of an experience. So, you know, the ratios there, I think it's something like 2 months of preparation, 2 weeks of a journey, you know, journey time. And in their case, oftentimes it's ayahuasca, and then 4 months of integration. You know, that, super encouraging.
Yeah. Well, that feels like a good positive note to close on. I mean, is there anything else you think like we're kind of missing or that you really just want to touch on before we close this convo?
I mean, I think that, you know, kind of reflecting it back to where you and I are in this arc, you know, we made video games together. We
shout out to Leela, Deepak Chopra.
You know, you've really worked to take album releases that have been mainstream, and you've had a broad range of collaborations. And I think our biggest lesson in the last couple of years, if I can speak for both of us, has really been this idea, I think largely fostered by COVID, that it's individuals, it's each of us doing our part, right? And stepping into our own power. And I think that those of us that are able to look past the fear and pay attention to what we've just been through, I think that there's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack and take forward, that to trust ourselves, to listen to our internal voice, and to take the time to cultivate that. And that, I think, is what gives me the biggest hope, whether we're talking about the future of the psychedelic space or just the future of our planet and us working together to solve many of the challenges that we face right now.
Yeah. Love it, man. Well, I'm looking forward to continuing the journey and
no doubt.
Excited for where a journey space can flow. And thank you for dropping in.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Krishna. I'm very proud of what you're doing, and I'm very grateful to be walking this path with you.
Thanks, brother. Likewise. Well, there it is. Thank you, Lewis. Always good to chat. And come join us for Journey Space. January 8th is our next upcoming journey. There's also one, I believe, February 12th. I could be wrong about the date. But go to journeyspace.com and see if it's right for you. Thank you so much. This song that you're hearing in the background is called Inside. And this was recorded at Lewis's farm, doing our work way, way back. This is probably 2015 or maybe even earlier. And it's just another example of some of the work that we've been helping each other on. And it's been such a beautiful, beautiful journey. So I'm so glad we could get into his story a bit there. Thank you to everyone on the East Forest Council on Patreon, patreon.com/eastforest. Thank you for reviewing the podcast. I think you can start to review podcasts soon on Spotify, for better or worse, but for our listeners over there. And thank you just for sharing it. And for saying hi, info@eastforest.org. And I hope to see you in the real world and in the virtual spaces. Probably not in the metaverse anytime soon, but, you know, that's just where I'm at. You guys keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit. But if you do, you know what to do. Do it with grace.